Welcome to Business Insights. I would like to thank you for tuning in. There's a lot of content out there, so you spending this hour with us means a great deal. This show is my opportunity to share the entrepreneurial success stories of our local business owners, and I encourage you to join me each week as we profile a new member of our business community. Welcome to Business Insights with John Racine. My guest today in the studio is Mike Woods. Mike is my cousin, and we both grew up in Port Hope. We had a five-year gap in age. We always seemed to bond on, you know, sports or music. And Mike picked up a guitar, say, at 14 years old, I think. Yeah. And he was always really enthusiastic about music. And he's one of the few people I know, actually, that has been able to turn his passion into a career. So it's not only him, it's also his wife, Christine Benson, who've really pooled their talents together to create a business where they're sharing their passion with an entire audience, whether that be school children, whether that be adults. And they're able to do that in so many different ways, which I find tremendously fascinating. So our conversation today is going to really take us through Mike's journey, as well as his specific craft. And we're going to try to, you know, yank out some insights from Mike on the industry specific for those who are listening. So I just wanted to start off with just a quick story from Mike about his first guitar, his first venture kind of really into music. What was that like, Mike?
Well, first, let me say thanks for having me on the program, John. I'm looking forward to this.
My pleasure.
So, yeah, first guitar, that likely was my dad's guitar. And, you know, my dad had a guitar in the 60s and was, and my musical influence comes from my dad mostly at a young age. I mean, I can remember in like grade two taking my Beatle records to show and tell. You know, I was that kid that sort of, you know, everybody right. was like, what do you got there? He had this old Tiesco Surfmaster guitar that was, you know, kind of a cool Japanese thing, you know, Sears catalog.
Sure.
But he kept it all those years, and I found it in the basement one day and was just like, I like this. I don't know what this does yet exactly. And I was little, you know, when I first saw it. And I was like, I like this. And, you know, years went by. I didn't really do anything with it. But when I was in my sort of early teens, I started to get reinterested in guitars. And I went back to that old guitar and picked it up and cleaned it up and started to kind of plunk away on it as you would when you're 13, 14, you know. And eventually it became what I wanted to do all the time. But that was my first guitar.
That's interesting because I think in a lot of people's cases, you know, their influence would be maybe through friends or maybe just listening to the radio.
Yeah.
But you actually had somebody who I know for a fact has a passion for the Beatles, has a passion for that era of music, and you're able to really listen to it as you're growing up. So you're kind of immersed into that.
You're not supposed to like your parents' music. You know, that's the whole thing. Right? You're supposed to rebel against all of that. And I was that weird kid that was just like, I like this. I like everything about it. I like the sound of it. I like the way the melodies were put together. And I still do. And I think there's an era of rock and roll from, say, 1955 to about 1980 where we went through everything from Elvis to you know, the Ramones and punk and things like that. And that 25-year period, I think someday will be looked upon as a type of renaissance. There's never been that kind of growth in that short amount of time in many other areas of art, and that's certainly something that's left a cultural impact and, you know, a huge imprint on our society. And it's definitely linked with how we function day to day. And it's influenced everything that's come after it. So that period of music really drew my attention from an early age. I just liked it.
So you go to high school. You're able to express yourself through music in high school as well.
Yeah, well, I was really heavily involved in sports as a kid and then growing up in high school and things like that. And there was a music teacher at Port Hope High School at the time named Jim Henderson, who teaches at CCI in Coburg now, who was very influential on getting me involved in my first bands and very supportive in how we did all of that. And he's definitely one person I can look back on and say, say that guy really made a difference. And teachers are important people, you know, if they hit you at the right time, they can really influence how you do things. And so Jim Henderson at Porto High School got me involved in playing with some other guys. I got into my first bands. I started to really kind of get more involved in the learning of the instrument and the craft and all of the things that go with it. But that was a big influence right there. And you know, meeting some other guys that were of like-minded interest was important too. There wasn't a huge music scene. I don't know if there is now either, but at that time there was definitely not a lot of guys playing, and you certainly felt like it was kind of this little small group of us that were making music at the time.
So I just want to kind of do a fast forward. I don't want to brush over anything too quickly, but you had got a job at CIBC in 1997.
How
old were you then?
I was 15 when I started at the bank.
And you were there for a couple of years?
Actually, I worked at the bank for 5 years. I was at CIBC, just as a teller.
And at the end of high school, you decided not to go into a music program after high school. You decided to go to Fleming College and do your paralegal certificate. What kind of drew that?
I don't know. I still don't. I don't know.
I think a lot of people at that age, it's the same thing. Yeah.
I already had a job in a spot where people come out of school and try to get into. I was already there, and I was moving up into more responsibilities within the bank, and I could have kept going that route 100%. I almost really didn't need to go to school because I was already doing everything. But
right.
I sort of thought, better have something else just in case I don't like this. And I didn't really like it that much, so I thought, I'll just try this. But really, I had no passion for that either, but sure. I just went and got my degree in that. And then
immediately following your course at Fleming, you joined Lynch Rutherford Tozer in Port Hope.
That's right. In high school, I did a high school co-op placement there.
Right.
And one day when I was working in the bank, one of the partners came in and just said, do you want to come work for us? And I turned around and gave my 2-week notice right there on the spot and said, yep, I do, and I'm going to leave. And so I did. I went and worked for 5 more years as an accountant.
During this time, though, you and Christine were in the position where now you had to kind of make a few decisions. She had graduated from OCAD.
That's
and
correct.
She's really going to go down the art route. Mm-hmm. You're now working at Lynch Rutherford Tozer, and I believe Christine received a grant from... Well, tell us a little bit about that grant.
Well, she was looking for summer employment. That's how our company started. And I was already working, and I didn't really want to, you know, leave my job to start something that we didn't know if it was going to fly or not. And I thought, I've already got stable employment. And we weren't married or anything. This was pretty early on, you know. And to kind of go into business together seemed like a lot at once. And so I just sort of helped her with some of the, you know, advising from a business standpoint because I'd worked in it for a long time. She received a grant from the Marie Dressler House in Coburg, a summer company grant, which was like a startup fund. I don't think it was a lot of money, but it was enough to pay like our insurance and things like that to start. And she opened Journey Through the Arts, and we started the summer program, a kids' art camp, which now has seen many, many kids. That was in 2001. The camp ran, I think, that first year, 6 weeks over the summer. And that was what kicked it off. And it really was successful right from the get-go. And we thought, well, there's something there that... you know, she had the insight to see that there was a need for the arts for children in Northumberland. There just wasn't a lot of things that were being offered at the time, and she had the insight to actually put something together and create it, and just went with it full tilt. But I stayed on working full-time as an accountant at the time, and not that I really wanted to, but I just thought it was the sort of safest bet. I didn't want to jump into anything, and, you know, I had my own place and had bills to pay, and I just didn't want to lose that.
I think that a lot of people that are making decisions whether to start their own company or to leave a current job to follow a passion, I think people really need to understand the security of having some stability, at least for the early part of any venture. And that really is what helps protect you if there is some sort of blip that occurs.
Well, yeah, and business is hot and cold, you know. So what I ended up doing was I started teaching guitar in the evenings when I'd get home from work. I would just get home from work, eat dinner, and then I'd teach 3 or 4 hours of guitar lessons every night.
So a quick question about that. So you've been playing guitar for quite a few years at that point, but what really made you feel that, you know what, I have developed this craft. I feel like there's enough of an audience. What was kind of like your first leap into that? Did somebody approach you?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I started to get, I remembered when I was learning, I took maybe a year or so lessons from a guy out of his house. And I just thought, I can certainly do that. That's, mm-hmm. I can get people started. But then one of the families that came to the summer camp asked if I wouldn't mind starting to show their son a few things on the guitar. And I said, yeah, sure. And then I'd already done a little bit at Port Hope High School. I'd mentioned Jim Henderson. I think he ran one of the first guitar courses, I think, in Ontario. I ended up doing like a TA in that class, which was good because I was kind of needing a bit of focus at that time, to be honest, in school. I was, sure. It was good to have something to look forward to. So I ended up teaching as part of my grade for that class. I think I passed the exam for the guitar program in September or something. So I thought, oh, good, I get a spare now. And he said, no, you're going to teach. So I'm really glad he made me do that because it set me on a sort of a trajectory. But I started to teach other like fellow students, mm-hmm. and enjoyed it. And when this was an opportunity, I thought, yeah, I'll give it a try. And I just did it. And gradually grew it from there until the point I was doing as well at night as I was in the daytime financially. And I just thought, well, maybe I don't need the daytime anymore.
Now you have this stability. Now you have the security mm-hmm. that you can make this plunge now into this. So
yeah, it was like 2 years. I worked two jobs just to kind of
just
make sure it was enough.
Make sure it was enough.
Yeah. And then I would take the summers off. Eventually I would talk to the firm and they were a little slower in the summer, and they were really good guys. They treated me really well there, and so I approached them if it would be all right for me to go, just take 6 weeks off from there and teach at this summer camp that we'd developed. And finally, and they were cool with that, so I went and did that.
So you started doing that, and shortly after, Journey Through the Arts added in an art gallery.
Yep, that's right, downtown Port Hope. We had a studio downtown Port Hope, which was actually, it was my apartment. We turned the living room into the art gallery,
right.
And it was all sealed off. You couldn't tell, but I lived there. And then all of a sudden, it was we had an art gallery and a place we both taught private lessons out of in the evenings, and on the weekends we had the gallery open, and it was a lot of fun. And we had met a lot of great artists in Northumberland, and good times.
That's very good. So you're able to start adding on pieces in which
right.
you clearly are finding there's a need for, or there's an opportunity for. And then you, I guess it was around 2008, you decided, you know what? One thing that people might not understand is that Mike is an exceptional collector of pretty much any memorabilia that really existed during this era that that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he has an incredible way of organizing himself. If Mike goes on a vacation, you come back and it's not these photo book albums. It's literally album by album, moment by moment.
That's right.
Perfectly recorded. Any concert that you go to, you have the ticket stub for. Mm-hmm. It's in immaculate shape. It goes into an album.
Yeah,
it's a very well-documented process. You have collected an enormous amount of memorabilia and decide, you know what? This in itself is a museum. It's really a shrine to rock and roll. You decided to open up a museum for that.
I had the idea because people kept showing up to see it. And
right.
I would be teaching like guitar lessons, and all of a sudden, there's Uncle Jim. He wants to see your room. And there's, and all of a sudden there was these people showing up that I didn't know and
mm-hmm.
Had heard about it and knocking on the door. And it got to the point where I thought, well, maybe I can just charge admission, why
sure.
not? And so I started to open, and my schedule was pretty crazy, so I just opened Saturdays after I was done my morning teaching, and
mm-hmm.
Saturday morning I just opened in the afternoons, and it was very well received. I had national attention. A lot of famous musicians donated pieces, and it was really a great experience to go around, and that's why I called it the Rock and Roll Experience, because for me it was a way to, all of a sudden you're representing a museum, you're getting offers for tickets, you're getting to meet musicians that you've looked up to as you were learning the instrument and things like that, and just getting to meet a lot of really cool people that maybe wouldn't have had the opportunity, and just networking places that you never really thought you'd get into. And
certainly,
it was a great time just to sort of explore all that world and learn about the music industry at the same time.
Sure.
Just you're kind of constantly networking about what you did. And that was the start. So out of that came my venue as well. So I had a big space downtown Port Hope, and the center was just an open loft area. So I had this idea of putting a stage in, and I was able to acquire the set from the 2009 Juno Awards in Vancouver. So I put the set in as the set for the stage, and opened a venue, and started to have musicians through as they were traveling from Toronto to, say, Montreal or Ottawa or even Kingston, and just try to get them a night in between in Port Hope. And it was going really well. I had maybe 80 to 90 people capacity with a little bar at the back, and it was just a great, you know, kind of like a big house concert in a way, but it was a really good atmosphere. People really had fun.
Certainly.
And did that for a number of years as well.
We're speaking with Mike Woods. We're just going to take a short break now and come back and get into the business of music. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine. My guest in the studio today is Mike Woods. Mike is the owner and operator of actually quite a few little ventures. And what we've discussed in the first segment really gives us a lot of the chronological story of how you got to where you are now. And, you know, we were just having a quick discussion there. And I really think, you know, somebody who can really spend or dedicate their time to their craft, to what their passion is tremendously rewarding, not just for yourself, but for the individuals that you're able to reach. And in particular, Mike gives lessons to about 60 students and has been doing that for quite some time. I just want to hear kind of your take on what that kind of impact has really been like. And really, if you want to share with us maybe one of those great success stories of some of your students.
Sure. I think going back to your first point, you have to really enjoy getting out of bed every day and doing what you do. And I, as I sort of pointed out before, I've worked jobs where I didn't and that I had to do. But when I finally got doing what I do now, it doesn't feel like going to work, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's an enjoyable day. And you know, I credit a lot of that to my wife, who just right from the start had that same vision. And you know, when I would doubt if it's the right thing, she would just give me the encouragement to keep going and do it. And she's an incredible person that way. And but yeah, you know, you work with kids and you see them when they're 7 or 8 years old, and then eventually you keep working with them and they're doing other things. And, you know, a lot of students I've taught have gone on to places like Metalworks in Toronto, and they're doing, you know, professional production now and things like that. Big shout out to the boys in Cleopatric. Luke and I worked together for a long time. You know, when he was in his early teens, I guess about 12 or 13, I just said, you know, we really got to get you into a band. You're a good guitar player. And he had great family support behind doing that, and was able to get him into a group and got them onto iTunes and got them through the whole process. And then you know, now he's touring the world with Cleopatric, and they're doing great, and I'm just so proud of the job they're doing. And it's an amazing thing to see someone like that, who was very shy at the beginning, you know, now he's fronting a band, and you know, they just played Lollapalooza. Like, it's an amazing so people of Cobourg and Port Hope and Northumberland need to get behind these guys. They're the, you know, they're actually doing it, and to get as far as they've gotten is an incredible feat. And you know, and my pals and the gentleman husbands that dedicated years and years to their craft to get to where they're going, like that, these are the type of guys that I've always admired and wanted to be working alongside, because they shared the same vision. They shared that drive to be the best that you can be at what you do and enjoy what you're doing every day. And that's a big aspect for what I do.
Well, what an opportunity also to partner with somebody like yourself, where, you know, you come from maybe a small town where I think sometimes music or arts gets kind of the push to the side maybe a little bit. And I think that if you have somewhere where you can have an outlet, not only just to practice your art, but also to have professional training and have somebody mm-hmm. who's going to be there to help guide you on the way. And I think, again, as you said, you wanted to push him to be into a band, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not just actually learning how to play the instrument, but also understanding where the opportunity lies. And that little encouragement, it goes a long way, really.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's just instilling confidence in somebody. You know they have the ability, but you have to make them believe that they do too. And that's an important part. Getting back to the small town idea, and it's sort of, I think for what we do in Northumberland, it's actually beneficial to be in a small town because you rely so much on word of mouth, and it's a community, and when you do events, you know people there, and everybody sort of pulls together. And I don't know if you'd just get lost and swallowed up in a major city center.
That's true.
You wouldn't have that. And there's a lot of support from this community, and from our own families and what we do. I owe mm-hmm. a great deal to Clay and Carol Benson, who's always helped me with guidance and been a great supporter of what I've done right from the get-go. And just so within our own families, plus the community at a whole, it's been a very great experience to be in Northumberland.
Quite recently, you built a log cabin in your backyard.
Yeah. So this is something that we knew was eventually going to have to change what we were doing somehow. We had a studio downtown Port Hope, and with the accessibility laws changing and basically the want to have somewhere closer to home and to, not have the overhead that comes with a place downtown, the idea came to build a studio on our property. And when we first had this idea, we had some friends over who are contractors, and they'd get some plans, which were really quite good. I liked what they'd come up with, but it wasn't as unique as I kind of wanted it to be. At that point, my father-in-law suggested that, have you ever thought of a log cabin? And I hadn't, and I thought, no, I hadn't thought of that, So, but he said, there's original cabins out there. We just have to find one and see if we can repurpose it and move it. And it wasn't maybe a month, maybe that might be long. I don't know. It was fairly soon after that. He'd run into a guy that had just discovered one in Eastern Ontario from the 1840s, and it was in pretty rough shape, which made it affordable enough to buy.
Right,
and yeah. I saw it through pictures. It came from a town called Dunvegan, Ontario, which is north of Cornwall.
Right.
I have complete trust in him, and he said it was a good space, and it was good size for what we're doing. And we took it down one log at a time and took it on two flatbed transport trucks to Grafton.
Where it was built.
It was sort of assembled. First time I saw the cabin, it was a pile of logs on the ground.
Yes.
All strewn across the field. And we put it together just to see what rot there might be or issues. And then we took it apart again and moved it to our property one log at a time in Port Hope and rebuilt it. So it's taken about 3 years.
And but it does look fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's got character, that's for
it
sure.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect space for both your business as well as Christine's business.
Yeah, it's an ideal place. And once you're inside, you feel like you could be in the middle of anywhere. And,
that's right.
Our backyard's very wooded, a lot
sure.
of trees. And
very
and
deep lot
yes,
as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And once we're out there, it's a perfect place to create and to do what we do.
That's fantastic. And also, since you took on the log cabin as part of your business structure, you also recently introduced a recording studio.
Yep. I'd been doing recordings with some guys locally, great producers, and I just felt I'd like to get into this and try it and see how it works. And plus, I have a lot of kids who, the opportunity to record is pretty far stretched for them. And
sure.
I wanted to give them that chance to do that as part of their curriculum.
So let me ask you this. So what is it like to record in a studio? I know nothing about this. I barely know how to operate this recording interview right now.
Right.
So when you introduce different instruments into that, tell us a little bit about what that space looks like, and then really the mechanics of kind of what that does.
Well, it used to be, you know, I used to do sessions here and there, and it used to be quite a bit bigger. You know, you needed a huge board and all of the rack-mounted effects next to you, which you can still use. Obviously, that's not gone away. But technology has come so far that you can now create on a computer and with a little interface that everything can plug into, and you've got, you know, software like Logic and things like that that allow you to create professionally, you know, sounding tracks that are done instantly, you know, without a lot of, you know, it's not reel to reel tape anymore, analog stuff. It's all digital, and it, you can change the sound of things just on the computer without having to re-record things. It's really an amazing thing.
So if you had somebody coming in and they were going to play guitar, you could record guitar simply in the studio just as normal, plug in, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What if you were to introduce something like drums or introducing bass or something like
that? You could overdub all of that. You could, one person could be a whole band.
That's right.
And just keep on, you know, mixing down things until it sounds like a completed track. But it's infinite how many things you could add to it. You could, and then, you know, you don't even have to record the whole song at once. You can record, you know, we're going to do a verse right now. And then you can literally cut and paste that verse and drop it in later. And that's a lot of people do that recording. A lot of pop music is, you know,
layered on top.
And the singers, you know, in pop music might sing one chorus and then it's cut and pasted three times throughout the song. And it's not
get it right once. And then reproduce that.
Yeah. And literally, they work word to word sometimes. With singers and things. So it's you don't necessarily have to have the song even written when you start recording. You can kind of just write it as you record and go, what would a chorus sound like here? And you just keep adding parts. So it's a different approach. But it's great for kids because they don't have to get it right each time.
We
make it right, you know. Let's try that G chord again, you know. It's good. You know, a lot of people get kind of freaked out recording. They get, you know, red light fever.
Sure.
And if you just think about it's not live, it's actually easier than a gig. You know, there's nothing permanent until you want it.
It doesn't feel like that pressure's weighing down on you. So then if you, again, especially if they're a student, you'll understand where they're making mistakes right away because you're the one who has been coaching them all the way through that process.
Right. Yeah, and I love recording. I'd almost give up performing to record. I love it. I like performing, but I love recording too.
So, Mike, you're in a band called Garage Dog.
Yep.
That band has been around for a while.
2009.
Okay.
2008, we actually sat down for the first time.
Right.
But 2009 was when we started playing shows.
So tell us a little bit about the music genre and kind of tell us a little bit about, you know, the different recordings you've done as well.
Well, Garage Dog is it's a great, fun band to be in. I've had a lot of fun with that band. And it was started with my good pal, Dean Smith, who happened to be my grade 8 teacher a long, long time ago. When I first met Dean again, I was in a band called Barefoot Soul, and we were playing a show at the Coburg Bandshell, and his band was on right before us. He was in another band. We met up and just thought, you know, maybe we should start a new band. Let's try that. So that's how Garage Dog came about. The two of us just started to find people, and we've had, you know, a lot of different lineup changes over the years, but him and I have kind of been, it's like a brother, you know, we've just really hit it off. And that's how it started. And we've done one album and some singles, and we've got another one in the works right now. So it's just been a lot of fun. We're starting to play a lot more festivals and things like that. And another band I've recently started with my pal Todd Garrison, who's the singer in Garage Dog, is a band called the Soul Shakers Union, and that band should be launching in 2019, so we're excited about that as well.
Okay, so I find it fascinating. You get a group of people together, and you have different talents, different backgrounds, different things like that, but ultimately when you come together, you kind of, a lot of interesting things can happen. New sounds can come out of it, new styles, new things like that. What is really the thing that really needs to be there for a band to be successful?
It's a good question. I think there has to be a mutual respect of everybody's talent and opinion. They're going to laugh at that when they hear that. Because you also kind of need a dictator, too.
That's right.
Yep. You need somebody to finally say. Because, I mean, if you get five, you know, in Garage Dog, we're an 8-piece. So if there's 8 of us, we're never going to agree on the same thing
ever.
You know, and so at the end of the day, everybody's ideas need to be thrown in. And then, you know, one or two, three people need to actually say, this is what we're going to do. And So I think the thing that's really needed in a band is the trust of your bandmates to know that, you know, if there's some part that I really believe in, that they're going to trust that it's the right decision, or vice versa, you know, that if somebody's really adamant about something, we all say, well, there's probably a reason for that. Let's all talk that out and figure out why. But it's important to have that mutual understanding of one another and the ability to kind of go, okay, well, let's sit down and discuss this and see if we can figure out why we're all not agreeing on
that. I always find bands' dynamic very interesting.
Oh, it's crazy.
Because if you look at like rock and roll history and like the extreme nature of certain things that happen, but it's what produces tremendous music as well. That's
the
thing.
You almost need it, because if everybody just went along with it, you'd never be pushing each other to do something greater.
That's right.
You need that. Well, I think the Eagles, or the Don Henley's quote is that, you know, every great band is one rehearsal away from breaking up. And it's like, it's kind of true. You know, you need that.
That volatility
is a
creation machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the way you get the creative, you know, juices flowing, and it makes you actually kind of commit and be serious about what you're doing. And bands are like small businesses. They're, you know, if you're not running the company properly, you're not playing live, you're not recording, and there's so many bands just kind of don't do anything because they don't have that drive to get that next step, you know. And we're not trying to make it in the music industry, but we'd like to keep recording, we'd like to keep playing, we'd like to do shows, and you know, so it's
for sure.
It's you need that, or else you can't continue doing that.
Okay, well, we're speaking with Mike Woods, and we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back and kind of get more into the introspective segment where we're kind of look back and get a lot of insights from Mike. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine. My guest today is Mike Woods. Mike provides guitar lessons to about 60 people. Mike ran a museum, a Northumberland Rock and Roll Experience, for some time. He also runs with his wife Journey Through the Arts, which is a summer camp for kids that happens throughout the summer. Mike is also a band member in several different bands. He's also started a recording studio. This is what it really means to be an entrepreneur in kind of the arts or the music space. You really have to take on quite a few different roles, see where different opportunities are going to lie, and really test them out. And that's really what's going to help you become successful. It's not necessarily just going to be one thing. Not everybody's going to be able to strike with the music industry and go tour the world or sell a million copies. There's a lot of different things that people can do. And one thing that Mike's really proud of, he started this rock and roll history kind of course. He's been able to go into schools, universities, and really kind of broadcast the message of rock and roll history, play a few tunes, and really kind of, you know, well, hopefully inspire more people to follow this path. Tell us a little bit about what you're specifically doing in this course.
Well, you know, my wife goes into schools and teaches art with the Journey Through the Arts in the school program, and it's really well received. And I started to kind of think, well, I wonder if, you know, some of the guitar classes in high schools and some, you know, university programs and things like that would be interested in rock and roll history. And they were. And so I've started to do that. And typically we focus on the era that I discussed earlier in the program, that sort of 25-year golden age of rock and roll. And because it's relatively obscure for younger people. They don't really, you know, they've heard of the Beatles. Some of them have, some of them haven't.
Sure.
They've heard of Elvis, they've heard of Johnny Cash, you know, these names, but they don't really know the relevance of why that's important, and they don't also see the link to today's music between that. So we try to give them the opportunity to see kind of where all of the music today that we listen to came from and where those influences were. And also try to give them an opportunity to put themselves back in time in that era. We will divide them into small groups and say, okay, you guys are talent agents and you have to scout somebody in today's presentation and sign them and promote them and tour them and make their record. And then we also
very fascinating.
So then we put all the limitations from that era on them as well. So you don't have
the phones,
internet. You don't have your phone.
Cell phone. Yeah.
There's a lot of racial prejudice.
Right.
You can't be gay. There's all this stuff that we don't, you know, things have come so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we put them right back there that, okay, now you got to promote this guy. So how are you going to do that? Or this artist. And so it's a bit of an awakening for them. You know, and I'll bring in things like 45s, you know, and they don't know what they are. And you have to tell them this is a record, and this is, you know, how you, this is your iTunes download in 1960, what it looked like. And I wasn't around then either, but, you know, I've learned quite a bit about it, and I've talked to a lot of people that were in that industry at that point, and I've learned the way it it was developed. So the hope is that we can just shed some insight into what they were going through at that point and why it was an important music.
That is very fascinating. I didn't actually realize that was like the kind of the curriculum for that course. That's very fascinating, because it's one thing to just to be strictly a history lesson on dates and times, what had happened, who were the names, and why were they big. But this is so much deeper. It's talking about really the environment in which everybody was operating, whether that would be the record label or it'd be the artist or the managers or the tour. People are going to be booking these tours or promoting these tours. It's a very interesting perspective. And I guess you get a lot of feedback saying this is very different, I'm assuming.
Yeah, a lot. And kids are pretty impressed by some of that influence. One of the ones I use a lot is, you know, I'll show a shot of James Brown and then I'll show a shot of Bruno Mars and I'll just say, you know, see if you can see the influence from A to B here. And they're just instantly like, oh, wow, it's the same, you know. And that's kind of what the whole goal is, just to say, like, there's a lot of artists that have kind of helped to create what is current today. And just give them a shot. Give them a listen.
Very fascinating. So I want to ask you a question. I try to ask this as often as I can. You had a daughter about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Any business owner, you know, that's really kind of focused in on their business and trying to grow it and really dedicating some serious amount of time, when people make a decision to have a family, this can change that dynamic quite a bit. What did that really mean to you when that happened?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, life altering, as everybody knows who's had kids. And it really put a lot of things in focus for me. I almost lost interest in collecting for so long. I was anything music. I played it, I collected it, I researched it, I talked about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, what was kind of my main passion was now secondary to this new little person that I just met. And within about 30 seconds, mm-hmm. nothing else mattered in the world. And you know, it just forced me to really prioritize things. And she's number one and always is. And that's my business. You know, it's what motivates you to do the best job you can and to leave a legacy behind and to kind of create the best atmosphere you can do it in. And but also to make sure that she's still before all that, to make sure you have time in there for her too. And, you know, and it's hard because of my hours are difficult for family, you know, like being a musician is not 9 to 5, teaching is not 9 to 5 and all of that. So the hours she's home from school, I'm unavailable for a lot. But now that I do work from home, I am able to see her every night, you know, at least at dinner time. And and it's tricky, even on the weekends with shows and things, you know, you're out for long periods of time between sound check and then the actual performance and then packing up and coming home, you're gone 7 or 8 hours. And then the next day, it's not like you just, you know, if you've been out till 2 or 3 in the morning, getting up for 7 is a difficult, but mm-hmm. you know, the next day you're not always at your best because you're exhausted, but you just try your best. But she's definitely made a change in my life for sure, for the better.
Certainly. Well said. You have an interesting situation because also Christine is also an entrepreneur herself. Yeah. So the two of you have different things that are pulling you in two different directions in some cases.
Yeah.
So you Christine might be at a school, you might be at a gig or whatever it is. So juggling that is certainly a difficult task.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to kind of have the family time that you want because, mm-hmm. you know, you're being pulled all the time. Entrepreneur is great. Running your own business is a fantastic thing because you get to do what you like, but you give up. You know, I can't remember the last time I just took a day off to take a day off. You know, like it just, you know, when you work for somebody else, it's easy to say, oh, I'm not coming in on Monday. You get paid anyway and mm-hmm. whatever, right? But when you do it yourself, you don't. And it's hard to sometimes just turn it off. I have a hard time doing that because you're sort of working all the time. You just book off these little hours to do other things. But sure. There's not a day where you don't do something for the business. So yeah, it's tricky that way. Yeah, you'd know certainly. The same thing, right?
Okay, this is where we kind of get into these interesting questions. Mm. One I like to ask people is, you've been doing this for quite a few years now, so you've had a lot of experience in this music industry. If you could go back to, say, Mike Woods in high school, or really at any point mm-hmm. in your early career, and go, knowing what I know now, this is the piece of advice that I think could help you either propel faster or just make it an easier transition. What kind of advice do you think you'd give yourself?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I think, I did follow my passion, which I'm really pleased of, that I did. Mm-hmm. I did kind of take a left turn when it was sort of unexpected.
Sure.
So I'm happy I did that. But I wish leading up to that, as you say, sort of in high school, that I'd taken that as something that was actually a possibility. I always took music as like, well, I enjoy it, but I can never actually make a living doing it. And I wish I'd at that time been a little more confident that I could have. I wish I'd maybe explored a degree in music of some sort.
That kind of leads into my next question, actually. It's a different environment from when you graduated high school
Absolutely.
Than it is now,
yeah.
certainly.
Yeah.
You have different opportunities that exist. Some have closed the door, really, in yeah. some respects, too, as yeah. well. If you were to give some advice to some high school students today, or people who are in their early 20s, or people who are earlier in their career, or want to make a career change, really,
yeah.
what are the type of things now that are tremendously important for them to be doing in order to really set them up to have a chance at succeeding? This is a very difficult industry, and
yeah.
I think your kind of insights would be very powerful for that group of people.
Well, I think the first thing is you have to be very flexible. When you rhymed off all the things that I do, any one of those things wouldn't be enough to carry what I do. I need many branches off the tree.
That's right.
And you need that. But you also, I know because I work with so many kids that there's a bit of a perfectionism creeping into the youth these days, that if they're not walking into a management position, it's not worth doing. If they get something wrong, they just stop and they don't do it again. And I'm generalizing here, and it's not all of them, but teaching kids songs and they make a mistake and they get so flustered. They just, because everything's projected on social media as perfect. You don't see pictures of or stories of people working through things and practicing and making mistakes. And
not a lot of images of kind of half good.
No, that's exactly right. They're getting constantly bombarded with perfect images, and when they don't do something right, they feel inferior and they get really self-conscious about it. Whereas I'll be like, boy, if you'd seen how many times I didn't do that right, you just eventually get it right.
Sure.
And so that is something that I think is really needs to be stressed a little more, that it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to try something and see if you like it, and if it didn't work, it didn't work. It's okay. It's all right to try something and see how does that kind of translate to your life. Is that okay to try, and just see what it does. But the music industry is so difficult, and it's full of a lot of people trying to do the same things. And it's okay to be in a band that goes and plays a local rec center somewhere and sends 200 people home happy. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to play a stadium to be a musician. If you can make people happy doing that, then that's great. And there's a real need to kind of reground things a bit, that you can still make a living and be comfortable doing aspects of a whole bunch of different parts of the music industry that you can enjoy simultaneously.
That's fantastic. Final question. Somebody listening now who has a passion for music, but they may be a little later in their stage, or a little too late for mm-hmm. them to pick up the guitar in high school. Somebody who's maybe my age or maybe our mm-hmm. parents' age, who has an interest but just needs that little spark of motivation. What would you say to somebody who just wanted to pick up an instrument, be that any instrument?
Well, I just say do it. My oldest student is 80 years old. I have people that take lessons just to keep their arthritis in check, just keep their fingers moving,
Interesting.
There's nothing wrong with playing for fun.
That's right.
You know, and playing as a pastime and playing to turn your mind off from other things for a while and to get stress gone. And it's like going for a big walk. You know, I sit down with my guitar for half an hour when I actually get to play just for myself, which is kind of rare these days. But, you know, there's nothing like it. I can disappear in that for, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, I better get back up to what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, like
yeah,
you just,
sure,
you can kind of just go off for a while. And so anybody that has an interest in a musical instrument, it's not going to be easy. There's no, there's no such thing as an easy instrument. But you have to give yourself a bit of slack, too, that, you know, if you are starting older or later in life, you might not retain knowledge or have your fingers move like when you were 12. You know,
sure,
it might be a little bit, you know, you can't compare yourself to, you know, a kid taking
lessons.
It's
not the same trajectory.
No, you're on a different incline.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you can't have a great time with it and a lot of fun and,
sure,
and just get into it, enjoy it from as a hobby. You know, people garden, but their gardens aren't judged. And,
exactly,
you know, you're not performing your garden. You're just going out and having a good time, right?
That's so right.
You can do the same thing with the guitar. You can just play for yourself and, you know, and I think it's a wonderful thing to get into. I'd encourage anybody to try it.
I want to thank you very much for the interview. It's fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
We could probably talk for hours at end. How do people get in contact with you? I know you have a couple different venues or operations here. How would somebody get in contact with you to know a little bit more about some of the specific things that you're doing?
Check the website, logjammusic.com. There's a bunch of information on there, photos, or you could give me a call, 905-375-9174, and I'd be happy to talk to you in person and get you started on your path in music.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. You can check out my website. It's johnmeansbusiness.com. We just made a big transition on WordPress over to another theme. Come check us out. Check us out on Facebook, Business Insights with John Racine. Please like and share our posts and page. Thanks a lot. Take care.